I'm going to begin my talk tonight with a short but wonderful quote from Jigme Lingpa, one of the great Tibetan Buddhist Dzogchen masters. And he said, "Nothing hinders awakening more than not realizing what is simply there. Ultimately, awakening is a body-mind-heart experience of completeness. Right there in the very midst of life's imperfections." And the Buddha often described this systemic quiescence as quenched. In fact, quenched is one of the best translations of the word nibbana. So, this quiescent quenching means there's nothing to seek, nothing to lack, nothing to add or remove. In fact, this is a wholeness which holds all contradictions side by side, not rejecting any of them and not accepting any of them. Just this continual capacity for recognition. And that clear knowing has a quality already embedded in the clear knowing, which is unbounded, compassionate will to manifest. It is unsurprising that a mind which is confused would find that very possibility ungraspable, insoluble. This ultimately becomes the cause for a confused mind when it gets to a level of confusion that is so great to just collapse into inconsolable ignorance. Many of you know that I have been a practicing psychotherapist for over 2 decades, and it is rare, honestly, for me to experience this kind of collapse into inconsolable ignorance. However, as many of you may have experienced, this past week was kind of a crazy week in the world. You know, the energy in the world this week is sort of out of control. And I actually, this past week, had two of my patients experience this kind of delusional collapse. It's not that I haven't seen it before. Having two of them have this experience in the same week, an experience, frankly, I really haven't had to shepherd anyone through. Oh man, maybe it's been 10 years since I really had to do this. It was quite the week for me, both as a clinician as well as a practitioner, because being in the presence of someone you've known for quite some time and having them utterly lose the thread of reality and get lost completely in an internal narrative world that is entirely devoid of truth. It is something we talk about in Buddhist psychology. When you're in the midst of it with someone, you've known them for quite some time, and it's not a possibility you even imagine, and there it is. It is quite eye-opening because I can see clearly how tenuous the thread of clarity and wisdom and presence in reality is for a human mind. So I've been asking myself this question since this has happened this week. I decided I would just write the question down. So here's the question: how does one liberate mental confusion and rest firmly in that clear knowing and the spontaneous presence of just there-ness, this ordinary existence we have? How does the liberation, clearing away of any mental confusion around the way things are, how does this happen? Because it's been such a big week, and you know, normally I work on my Dharma talk a couple of weeks ahead, but it's there's been a lot in the last 2.5, 3 weeks. So I didn't really start to really think about what I wanted to say. And as you all know, I like suttas. So I usually go looking for a sutta. But, you know, I was so exhausted. And I just went to the Samyutta Nikaya and I said to myself, you know, I trust the Dharma enough. I literally am just going to open the Samyutta Nikaya. I'm going to open the book. I'm pretty well sure whatever is there is probably the thing I need to teach about tonight. So I went over to my copy of the Samyutta Nikaya, which is, any of you have never seen it, Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, it's very thick. And I put it down and I just closed my eyes and literally put my hands on it and opened it. And it opened to a sutta I had never seen before. The sutta is the Asavisa Sutta. It's Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 35, verse 197. And it's called the Simile of the Vipers. So I'm going to read this sutta because it is shockingly on point for answering the question. The Buddha is before the assembly of the Sangha, the monks and nuns, and he begins the Simile of the Vipers by saying this. Suppose there were four vipers. And for anybody who doesn't know what a viper is, it's a snake. Suppose there were four vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom. Then suppose a person who loves life, desires happiness, and is averse to suffering happens to pass by these four vipers. And as they pass by, there are some people who see the person passing by and they immediately warn this individual by saying, these four vipers are of fierce heat and deadly venom. So from time to time, they must be lifted up. From time to time, they must be bathed. From time to time, they must be fed. From time to time, they must be laid to rest. But if one of these four vipers ever becomes angry with you, then you will meet death or deadly suffering. Therefore, you must do what has to be done. So the individual who passes by these vipers, hearing this and fearing the four vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom, immediately starts running in whatever direction they can. So they're running, but then another group of people stop the person and warns them. Now, five murderous enemies are pursuing you. Therefore, you must do what has to be done. Okay, so now this poor person, fearing the four vipers and the five murderous enemies, once again takes off in a direction that they think is going to be safe. Unfortunately, once again, there's a group of people, and now they warn the person. Okay, now a sixth murderer, an intimate companion, is pursuing you with a sword drawn. And so now you really have to do whatever has to be done. Again, this person now is not only fearing four vipers, five murderous enemies, and a sixth murderer who's an intimate companion with a drawn sword. This causes them to once again desperately flee, and the person is running into an empty village. And they go house to house, but whatever house they go into, it's utterly deserted and empty. And when they're in each of these houses, whatever pot they may take a hold of, that pot is completely hollow, void and empty. And the person hears the chorus of individuals warning them. Village attacking robbers will raid this empty village. So please, now you really have to do what has to be done. Now this poor individual is fearing four vipers, five murderous enemies, a sixth murderer who is an intimate companion with a drawn sword. and village attacking robbers. And there's only one thing the person can do, and that is to take off toward a body of water. So the person, seeing this great expanse of water, has some clarity. In the midst of all this craziness, they have clarity. And what the person sees is, right now, he's standing on the near, dangerous, and fearful shore. And he looks across a big expanse of water and sees that there is a shore on the other side, which, for all intents and purposes, is probably safe and free from danger. Unfortunately, there's no ferry boat or bridge available for this person to cross from the near shore to the far shore. However, instead of collapsing in the midst of all this mental confusion, the clarity remains. And now the person thinks, I don't have a bridge, I don't have a ferry boat. It doesn't mean I can't get across the water. So I will collect grass and twigs and branches and foliage, and I will bind them together into a raft so that I can safely cross from the near dangerous shore to the far shore. And this person sets about building this raft. Interestingly, in this simile, just as a sidebar, the Buddha doesn't really talk about how, once the person realizes they have the capacity to move away from suffering, the Buddha doesn't really say anything about how this gives the person a chance to not be tormented by the chorus of voices that keep saying you have to do what needs to be done, because they basically are doing what needs to be done from the point of view of clarity now. Once the raft is constructed, the person alights upon it and crosses over the expanse of water and reaches the far, safer shore. So having gone beyond danger through their own wise recognition and their wise effort, the person now stands on the high ground of clarity. Ending this beautiful simile, the Buddha now in the sutta launches into his explanation. So he begins by saying, I have made up this simile to convey the following meanings. The four vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom refers to the four great elements, earth, water, fire, and air. At the time of the Buddha, the aggregate constituents of the world itself were viewed as being these four elements. The four vipers and the fierce heat and deadly venom is the surround, the world itself, that which we must contend with every day as a conscious being. And that means that this world inherently is of the nature to bring a wide variety of experiences that may heat us up and could also, like my two beautiful patients, can also take us to the brink of misapprehension of the way the world actually is, to such an extent that the world is now perceived as a deadly, venomous place when it is not. So that's the meaning of the four vipers of fierce heat and deadly venom. And then the Buddha says, the five murderous enemies refers to the five aggregates subject to clinging. Now, of course, this is the Buddha's specialty in terms of the material that the Buddha was known to teach all the time. And the five aggregates of clinging are material form, so this is another way of referring to the vipers, our own capacity to feel, but it very particular way of feeling. This is the way we sometimes mistake, we misapprehend what is around us in the world because of the fact that the feeling tone of a particular experience lands in us in a way that is not inherent in the experience itself. So, I mean, a great example of that, I don't particularly like raisins. Lots of people love raisins. So for me, raisins, the feeling tone of raisins is icky. It's unpleasant. But for many people, it's pleasant. And then there's a whole bunch of other people for which it's neutral. So feelings determine a lot of what we cling to in terms of experience we either want to get rid of, we want to stop, or we want to hold on to, hoping it will never end. And feeling is what comes first. That feeling tone comes first, and the next thing we have is perception. And perception is a whole lot of different things. It isn't just cognition itself. It's also all of the mental thinking we do about percepts, about the things that come in through our five senses. And our perceptions and the feeling tone of experience has a lot to do with the volition that we tend to bring to experience. And volition is like intention, but often volition doesn't have a lot of intelligence or wisdom attached to it. It's quite subject to habit perception. It's also subject to mindlessness, a lot of the way that we have strange ideas about things. Consciousness is always very interesting when it comes to the five aggregates, because one would think consciousness should be at the beginning, because if we're not conscious, we can't perceive any of the material forms. We can't have feeling about it. We can't have thoughts about it. We certainly can't have volition about it. On the other hand, consciousness in the Buddha's topology of mind has everything to do with when you're born in a human body, consciousness is not perfected. And so we often misapprehend, misperceive experience itself, which leads to a tremendous amount of suffering. And because of that basic, it's called primordial ignorance, because of avidya that goes along with being in a human body, this is why we practice to purify the portals of our perception so that we are not subject to clinging to false notions about the nature of reality. So those are the five murderous enemies. Then the Buddha continues and he says, the sixth murderer, the intimate companion with drawn sword. I love that simile. Something so close to you, you feel like it's a friend, but it's got a drawn sword the entire time. And the Buddha says this refers to the way humans hold pleasure as their salvation from suffering, and they lust after that which they consider they lack. So, of course, this is the second noble truth, that intimate companion with a drawn sword, which is the mind that is subject to ignorance, to getting it wrong, to greed and hatred, and not recognizing the way things actually are, the empty aspect of all phenomena, taking phenomena as permanent, as mine, as me and mine, taking phenomena as this world is here to keep me from any form of pain. And this is what happened to my two patients in a way, because they misapprehended the basic way in which life is full of basic pain and basic joy. You can't get away from either of them. And their inability to have clarity that the way they were meeting the basic pain of life had crippled their ability to show up for themselves, to recognize the way their life really was and all of what they had. They saw all of it as useless and saw themselves as incapable of creating any kind of existence that wasn't 24/7 mental suffering, except they really didn't have the ability, because of the collapse, they didn't have the ability to recognize, oh, I actually have complete control over mental suffering. I don't have complete control over life's basic pain and joy, but wow, my own mental suffering and not having it, I can completely not have because of wisdom and because of limitless compassion. So that's the sixth murderer. Then the Buddha continues and says, the empty village refers to the six internal sense bases. So these are very easy, the internal sense bases. For Buddhism, there's actually six sense bases, not five. So it's sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. And the sixth one in Buddhism is the monkey mind, the narrative mind, the elaborating mind, the VR, you know, the basic virtual reality people invent in about the world and about themselves that only lives in their own mind and is never true. That's the sixth sense base. And the Buddha says all six of them are void, hollow, and empty. No matter how much anybody thinks those six are real and true, the only reality they have is that sight happens, sound happens, touch happens, taste happens, smells happen, and this internal narrative happens. Although none of them are permanent, none of them exist on their own. It's just this complex of internal experience that is responding to all of what comes in from the external world. And he continues and says, the village attacking robbers refers to the six external sense portals, which deliver pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral phenomena to the mind. And that's what I was speaking of earlier, Vedana, the feeling tone of experience. And so the internal sense bases are there to help us perceive phenomena in the external world. And the sense portals, which the Buddha sees as external, are there, the ear, the eye, the actual portals themselves are there to deliver that very first basic taste of phenomena, which always is a feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. They're robbers because most people don't experience the feeling tone of experience directly. You have to be a practitioner and start paying attention to the feeling tone of experience. It's just so close to the actual way in which we cognize phenomena. It's so close to it that we don't even notice it. We just kind of don't. We just feel it and we react to it. It's very reactive. So then the Buddha continues and says, the great expanse of water refers to the four floods. And he describes the four floods as sensuality, existence itself, all views, doesn't matter what view, all of them, and primordial ignorance. And it's so interesting that some people misperceive Buddhism as saying sensuality is bad, not self means no existence. Often people misapprehend the Buddhist view of the nature of suffering, which actually is not all life is suffering. This is a total misunderstanding of it. And the Buddha was very famous for saying, if you really want enlightenment, Ultimately, one has to recognize all views have their problem. They all have an ultimate incorrectness about them because Nibbana is beyond all views. The nature of the clear light of mind is beyond all views. All views can be experienced because of the lucid nature of mind, but the lucid nature of mind is not impacted at all by any particular view anyone may hold. And the primordial ignorance, as I said, is what is inherent when you get born in a human body, that we don't see the way sensuality is actually a beautiful method for recognizing the richness and beauty that is the world and our existence. This is the other thing my two patients lost. They lost the thread of the beauty because they couldn't see the real nature of existence, of their existence. All they could see was the internal story of non-existence, of how horrible existence is. That is utterly, completely false. There is no truth to that. And then the Buddha continues and says, the near shore, which is dangerous and fearful, refers to the vehicle by which we get caught in everything he's just described. And that is identity clinging. Clinging to the idea of a self that is dependent on all of these horrible things that this poor person is running away from and perceives as dangerous. None of these things is self, because ultimately there is no such thing as a self. It is merely a co-arising, co-created phenomena that happens along with all phenomena simultaneously. And that is why Buddhism is a non-dualistic, because there is no separation. All phenomena, internal, external, it all arises, exists, and passes away simultaneously, moment to moment, even though we do not experience that directly. And then the Buddha continues, the further shore, which the individual in the simile sees, will be safe and free from danger. Obviously, the Buddha says this refers to Nibbana, the quenching that is the realization of suchness. And that suchness is what is simply there, as it actually is, without any delusion. It's delusion-free. There's no mistaking when there is quenching of ignorance in all its forms, in all these forms. All there is the moment, our existence, phenomena, internal and external, as it simply is, beyond no elaboration whatsoever. And finally, the Buddha says the raft refers to the Noble Eightfold Path, which many of you hopefully are familiar with. And the Eightfold Path is the fake it till you make it method that the Buddha put forth in the Four Noble Truths. So until you are realized, the Eightfold Path allows practitioners to cultivate that wise view of the way things are, cultivate wise intention about why they're here, what each moment is truly about, and how to be in it, and to regard all other humans in very specific ways. Use wise speech, practice wise action, practice wise livelihood, and practice wise effort, not under-efforting, not over-efforting. Make sure there's a vigilance about recollecting how come we're here, what each moment is for. Each moment is a moment for practice. That is why we have mental, emotional, and physical suffering, so we can awaken in the midst of it by simply recognizing that which simply is. And that is helped through wise concentration, through appropriate practice. And the Buddha ends the simile by saying, one who arouses the energy and zeal to cross over to go beyond ignorance, greed, and hatred, stands firmly on the higher ground of liberation. And that is my wish for all of us in the world, everywhere, every single being. There's so much ignorance right now. And it is certainly my wish for my two patients. So I want to end this talk with a very beautiful quote, the amazing Lama Angkon, an emeritus professor at Rice University and one of the only women academics in the Buddhist academia who has been around since the early 70s. So she said, "Everything arises from the ground of being and dissolves into the ground of being. Reality, ultimately, is nothing other than that ground of being." And so I leave you all with this quote, because in the midst of our dealing with the four vipers and the murderous enemies and the empty houses that is human existence, that we find a way to reconnect and remember all of this arises, exists, and passes away all the time. And that what is the essence of who we are is the ground of being from which all things arise, exist, and dissolve into in every moment. So that is it for this evening, and I thank you very much.